Hello, everyone, and happy Wednesday evening. Yeah, I forgot I had to unmute. Isn't that funny? Until I'm freshly showered, because we went to the sand dunes today, and on our retreat this week. And what we did, there's four of us who went in four separate directions. We found isolated areas in the sand dunes, and spent time in contemplation and meditation. And when you come home, you're just covered with sand. I mean, in your ears and on your skin and in your hair. And so I came home and took a shower real quick. So I'm all fresh now. What I'm going to do tonight is share from Consciousness and the Absolute. And I'm in the conversation that starts on November 8th, 1980. It looks like it's on page 9. Why is it that we naturally seem to think of ourselves as separate individuals? So that's the question that the questioner is putting forth to Nisargadatta Maharaj. Why is it that we naturally seem to think of ourselves as separate individuals? Nisargadatta says, your thoughts about individuality are really not your own thoughts. They are all collective thoughts. You think that you are the one who has the thoughts. In fact, thoughts arise in consciousness. As our spiritual knowledge grows, our identification with an individual body-mind diminishes, and our consciousness expands into universal consciousness. The life force continues to act, but its thoughts and actions are no longer limited to an individual. They become the total manifestation. It is like the action of the wind. The wind doesn't blow for any particular individual, but for the total manifestation. So I think in the first paragraph, I think this is very important for us to remember. And I know that we frequently forget that the thoughts that come into our minds are not our thoughts. I remember when I was still a pretty new spiritual student. I was still working at PHCS in Waltham. I hadn't even left my job and moved to North Carolina yet. And I was asking Holy Spirit questions every day and receiving answers. I don't remember what my question was, but I remember this answer. First of all, I got to tell you a little something about my past. I used to be in the military, and I worked in intelligence. And we had this room called OPSCOM, which is just operational communications. And OPSCOM is filled with all kinds of, you know, they were almost like automatic typewriter kind of machines back then, where people from all over the world, you know, both our allies and Americans who had intelligence that affected our area could send us message. And these OPSCOM machines were always running off with all of these messages. And there would always be somebody who was responsible to walk around and look at the OPSCOM. And when they saw something really urgent, rip it off and carry it to the appropriate person, right? So it was incoming intelligence to help supplement the intelligence we were gathering to give us a bigger picture of what was going on. All right, so you know what OPSCOM is now, right? So this message that I received from Holy Spirit told me that my thoughts were incoming just like OPSCOM, right? They weren't me thinking the thoughts. They were incoming, just like OPSCOM. And when I believed them, they were the script. And then I acted on them and I enlivened them. But if I could see them as just OPSCOM and is not at all relevant to me, you know, these thoughts could just come and they would not move this body in any way. They would not cause emotion. They would not cause me to speak. They would not cause me to act. That the only way that the thoughts could cause this body to experience emotion, speak, or act is if I saw the incoming Opscom message as relevant. And I remember perceiving that as extremely helpful. It was extremely helpful for me to see the incoming thoughts as nothing but a script, and to see, you know, me, you know, as a potential actor, but I didn't have to be an actor, right? I didn't have to live out that script. And this is really what Nisargadatta is telling us. He says that your thoughts about individuality are really not your own thoughts. They are all collective thoughts. Of course, much later, the other message that I received, which is very similar to the Opscom message, but more advanced, was the code, right? The code really kind of talked about how you know, there's a collective script, and then there are apparent individual scripts, and that they're all connected, right? And as you give attention and believe it in the individual script, you feed that into the collective script. He says, your thoughts about individuality are really not your own thoughts. They are all collective thoughts. I remember also I used to have this lady named Debbie who lived with me, and Debbie was a thief. And of course, she felt very, very guilty about being a thief. And I tried to explain to Debbie, although I didn't encourage her to continue stealing, I tried to explain to Debbie that really she was our thief. You know, like it was the collective that gave her those thoughts. You know, when she was 13 years old, her dad, for some reason, kicked her out of the house. And she had once told me that story. She says, my only thought about, you know, how I would take care of myself was to steal. And I told her, I said, Debbie, if your only thought was to steal, you know, like, you know, that's what the consciousness fed into your mind. Well, then, you know, that at that time was your only option. Right? I mean, you're our thief. You know, we as a whole created this Debbie character thief. And, you know, it's difficult for people to accept that, but I don't mean this as a cop-out. I just mean we are literally all in this together. And as we begin to awaken, we do have a choice. You know, as we begin to awaken, we can realize that these thoughts are not our thoughts, and we can choose not to act on them, right? Choose not to believe them. Choose not to mull them over. Give our attention to them, et cetera, et cetera. So again, your thoughts about individuality are really not your own thoughts. They are all collective thoughts. You think that you are the one who has the thoughts. In fact, thoughts arise in consciousness. As our spiritual knowledge grows, our identification with an individual body mind diminishes. So again, as our spiritual knowledge grows, we become more and more aware of the choice not to believe these thoughts. Right? And then a thought can come through your mind and you can totally ignore it. You can just make the choice to totally ignore it, to not believe that thought. As our spiritual knowledge grows, our identification with an individual body mind diminishes, and our consciousness expands into universal consciousness. The life force continues to act, but its thoughts and actions are no longer limited to an individual. They become the total manifestation. It is like the action of the wind. The wind doesn't blow for any particular individual, but for the total manifestation. So what Nisargadatta is saying here is that when his body speaks and acts, it isn't coming from the belief in a Nisargadatta individual. He does not see himself as a Nisargadatta individual. And all of his speaking and all of his acting, everything that this body, you know, I'm pretending like I'm him now, everything that this body is moved to do is for the whole, right? Everything that he does is for the benefit of the whole. And that's perfectly natural for the Nisargadatta body because he sees himself as the whole. He doesn't see himself as an individual. The questioner says, as an individual, can we go back to the source? Nisargadatta says, not as an individual. The knowledge I am must go to its own source. So again, the idea of me as a particular person has to die first, right? And we all know this. We know that the idea of me as a particular person dies and I awaken to what we call the I am consciousness. And then the I am consciousness eventually also dies, or we could use the language he's using here, it kind of merges back into its own source, right? But the individual can't make that step, right? The individual is way too illusory. I don't know how else to say it. The individual is way too illusory to ever reach to the absolute. The I am is more real. It's still illusory, but it's more real. It's a closer reflection of the truth because it's a unity consciousness rather than an individual consciousness. So that's why we seem to have these two awakenings. First, we awaken from the individual to the unity consciousness, which is a better reflection of the truth, even though it's still illusory. And then we awaken from this unity consciousness or the I am presence to the absolute, which is beyond any type of sense of self at all. So as an individual, can we go back to the source? Not as an individual. The knowledge I am must go back to its own source. Now, consciousness has identified with a form. Later, it understands that it is not that form and goes further, right? So the I am consciousness, when you awaken to the I am, you no longer have the thought, I am this body, I am this person, right? Which is why it's able to go on and take the next step. But when you think you're a person, the consciousness is identified with the form. So consciousness has identified with the form. Later, it understands that it is not that form and goes further. In a few cases, it may reach the space, and very often, there it stops. In a very few cases, it reaches its real source beyond all conditioning. And I wonder when he says, in a few cases, it may reach the space, if he's referring to what I've commented on before as Buddhist hell. You know, the Buddhists talk about this place, not really a place, it's a state of perfect peace, which many people mistake for awakening, right? And that's why when you come to this state of perfect peace, where everything is silent, you still have to inquire, what sees this, right? You still have to inquire, what sees this? But I'm not certain that's what he's talking about because he's not giving enough information. But he does say in a few cases, people reach this space. And again, not everybody reaches that peace that is the Buddhist hell, right? That it's very rare that people go that far. So he may be talking about that same state. In a few cases, notice he says it, by the way, he's not saying, this is a very good use of language, he's not saying in a few cases, people may reach the space. He's saying it, because really it's consciousness that's awakening to its source, right? So he says, in a few cases, it may reach the space, and very often, there it stops. In a very few cases, it reaches its real source beyond all conditioning. It is difficult to give up that inclination of identifying the body as the self. I am not talking to an individual. I am talking to consciousness. It is consciousness which must seek its source. And, you know, it's funny because today when I was on the sand dunes, what I was contemplating, my primary contemplation was the self-identification with the body. You know, I was contemplating in a very physical way. I was climbing a very steep, very difficult dune in winds that were kind of, sometimes I felt like I was being sandblasted. And there was no real solid place to put my feet. And I was actually carrying quite a bit of stuff. So it was very difficult. And to most humans, the situation that I willingly put myself in as I was climbing that dune would have been physically miserable. And what I was noticing as I was climbing the dune, I mean, I was aware of the fact that I was sandblasted. I was aware of the heat. I was aware of how hard it was to have footing. Sometimes it felt like I was going back more than I was going forward. You know, I was just aware of all of that. But there was a lot of joy. There's just complete joy, complete detachment from the body's experience. And I was paying attention to that, and I was noticing this is not no identification with body, right? But this must be weakened identification with body, because the body's condition is not affecting me. And I knew for certain that if I had asked some friends to come with me, they would have been miserable and wanting to turn back. You know, there was no doubt in my mind about that. But I was asking myself, but how does one get from this, which is a diminished identification with body, to no identification with body? And the only answer that I could come up with, and I don't know that it's true. Hopefully someday I can come back from no identification body and tell you if it's true or not. But the only answer I came up with is it has to be a miracle. Right? It has to be something that I just keep putting my willingness towards, you know, that I, to the best of my ability, you know, like meditation, watching awareness, all of that. But at some point, it has to just happen. I could not find a way to say, okay, I'll quit now. You know, you know, I couldn't find a way to do that. So we'll find out, you know, as we move forward. But he's noticing, he says he's talking to consciousness, right? And who is it that would say, okay, I quit identifying with the body in the way I'm speaking of it? That would be, I think, the person, which is why that won't work, right? The person can't let go of identification with the body. It's a decision that has to happen at the level of consciousness, which is why it would seem like a miracle. At least that's what I came to today when I was climbing the dune. And he seems to be saying that today. He says it is difficult to give up the inclination of identifying with the body as the self. And then he says, I am not talking to an individual. I am talking to the consciousness. It is consciousness which must seek its source. He says, out of that no being state comes the beingness. It comes as quietly as twilight, with just a feel of I am. And then suddenly the space is there. So now he's talking about the coming in. So it sounds like the Buddha's tale, if this is the same, was the first thing experienced, right? Right? First there's this I am, and then there's this place, which would be just before the source, where there's all of this peace, right? He says, it comes as quietly as the top twilight with just a feel of I am. And then suddenly the space is there. And then in the space, movement starts with the air, the fire, the water, and the earth. All these five elements are you only. Out of your consciousness, all of this has happened. There is no individual. There is only you, the total functioning is you. The consciousness is you. You are the consciousness. All the titles of the gods are your names. But by clinging to the body, you hand yourself over to time and death. You are imposing it on yourself. I am the total universe. When I am the total universe, I am in need of nothing because I am everything. But I cramped myself into a small thing, a body. I made myself a fragment and became needful. I need so many things as a body. And right here is a place where I practice letting go of the body, which could explain why I was able to climb that dune today in joy. I have been practicing for years letting go of the body at the level of apparent need. Not that I don't feed the body and, you know, go to the bathroom and take showers. But I notice things like body temperature. You know, does the temperature in the room have to be perfect for me? No. Is this body surviving in this temperature? Yes. Then let's just leave it as it is. You know, I notice things like pain. Do I need to put my attention on this pain? Do I need to complain about this pain? Do I need to think about this pain? No. Then I will just allow the pain to be there, and I'll continue with my day, you know? And this is something I've been doing for, I don't know, at least a few years now. So in that way, I feel like I am doing my best, in addition to awareness, watching awareness meditation. Okay, this is in addition to that. I feel like I do my best in my daily life not to take the body too seriously. You know, just not to take the body too seriously. Let the body be whatever the body is and pay close attention to the fact that it doesn't actually affect me. Right? And again, when I say me, obviously I'm not talking about the body. So at this level where he says, I need so many things as a body, I practice reducing those apparent needs. I pay attention to, do I really need this? You know, do I really need to give attention to this? And in the absence of a body, do you and did you exist? Are you and were you there or not? Attain that state which is and was prior to the body. Your true nature is open and free, but you cover it up. You give it various designs. So what's coming to me now, that's the end of the message. What's coming to me now is that it's important for us to realize we are not the person that we think we are. To realize that we are consciousness, and to start to the best of our ability reclaiming ourselves by ceasing to be a person and ceasing to be a body. Like I said, do I need the room temperature? And one reason I comment on the room temperature, in case you guys don't know, you may know, you know, once ladies reach a certain age, many of us, you know, we have these hot flashes, right? And I always think it's so funny watching a woman say, oh my God, it's so hot in here, let's change the temperature. And I always think that's hilarious because, of course, she's just having a hot flash. The temperature's fine. So what I have practiced doing ever since I've started having these hot flashes, and hot flashes, at least for me, are also frequently followed by chills, so I go from hot to cold, is I've practiced noticing I don't need to make any change at all. I don't need to rip off this jacket when the hot flash comes. I just sit and wait. You know, I don't need to add blankets when the chill comes. I just sit and wait. And I think that has been a great help. You know, I think it's really been a great pain. You know, I have pain. People can tell you that I have back pain, but I think Shauna can also tell you I did not tell them I had back pain. She just observed by my posture. You know, I don't go around talking about my pain all the time. I don't go around thinking about my pain all the time. And in fact, I change my lifestyle very little because of my pain. I'm not stupid. But I still do many things that most people with my pain would not do. Right? And it doesn't affect me. I practice that. So, you know, I guess if anybody wants to do the best they can as consciousness to start letting go of this habit of identifying with the body, I'd say start letting go of the habit of identifying with the body in whatever way stands out for you that you can do that, you know? So, Ron, do you have this book? Do you want to just take the next message next week, which is November 9th, 1980?
Sure. I'll mark it.
And then it's very, very short, so you might also get to November 12th, 1980. I'm not sure, because November 9th is very short.
Okay.
But if you would just shoot me an email and let me know how far you got, then I'll know where to begin next time.
Be happy to.
Okay?
Great.
All right. Thank you. And Don, you'll still record him, and I'll make a post now, and you'll just post. I'll make a post with next week's date on it, and you can just save it in the drafts, and then next week use that for Ron's post, okay? All right. Good night, everyone.